Welcome to AlleyCast, where we talk all things business, body image, mindset, and more. If it's juicy, we're talking about it, baby. Let's dive right in. Thank you so much for being here. For anyone listening, we just recorded my episode on Kate's podcast, and we're doing a little switcheroo, which is fun. To kick off, since I just talked for myself, about myself for an hour, I would love to hear, about your journey and whatever you want to share about your journey and, with food in your body, be my guest.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. Just loved having you on, and I love learning about you. So it's really fun to be on the other side. And I love your podcast so much. I really listen to it a lot. I think I have it on like regular downloads on my feed. So I'm happy to be on it. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. I developed an eating disorder, I think, when I was 14. I don't really know exactly when it happened because it wasn't that black and white for me, but I think I started creeping in around age 14, and I really think it was because of my history with being a performance sort of based athlete. I was a competitive gymnast and cheerleader, like travel cheerleader, like full on, this was my life sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, from a really young age, I was very body focused in cheerleading. I literally remember being at a competition, and they would always sell shirts at competitions. We went to these competitions every like week or so. And one time one of the shirts said, "Please don't feed our flyer." Like literally that's the shirt that they sold. Yeah.
No,
like
the flyer
that you put up. And as an adult, I could throw up thinking about how messed up that is. But as a kid, I was like, that's so funny. And
right.
I'm like, I don't know where the other adults were, but they were like, haha, wow. That's funny too. I guess that's how it was back then, diet culture.
Right.
Because it was like eating disorders and depression and mental health is so hush hush or something. I don't know. So yeah, that was a pretty toxic place for me. Not all the people on the team, I think, were affected by it, but I think probably a lot of them were, and I was one of them. So I just really had this idea of wanting to be thin, and I always wanted to be the thinnest person in the room. For some reason, I guess I thought that made me more worthy and better. So I started having an eating disorder. I remember just, it was kind of innocent, whatever here and there, and then progressively got worse. I started to engage in eating disorder behaviors. I was bulimic, and I started abusing laxatives after I had experience with Miralax that wasn't great, that really got me thinking, okay, laxatives could do the same thing. It was really bad. And then I just had it all the way up until I was in college, and I dropped out of college and I moved to LA. And I think I was 20 when I moved to LA, and I remember kind of moving. I moved because I really liked this boy who is my husband now. So it worked out. Don't recommend doing that, but I was like, I'm just going to do it, whatever. And my parents were cool with it. So I was like, thanks, mom and dad. So I moved to LA, and then I got scouted as a model really early on. And I remember thinking, okay, this is my eating disorder was really happy that I got scouted. It was like, good job, Katie. All those years of basically killing yourself and suffering are worth it. And it's a good thing. And so I knew in my heart, I just don't want to say the back of my head, I knew in my heart that it was not good for me to be modeling. I knew that it was probably not great, but my eating disorder voice was too loud. I went into my agency meetings kind of, thinking, okay, this is my time to shine. And I ended up signing the contract with them. And it was like a legitimate agent, and I was really excited. I had just moved to LA. It was like a dream, it was great. And after they signed me, they like pulled me into this room, and they were like, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to stop, you don't need to do anything but walk. You're just walking on the treadmill is good. Try to avoid pasta and carbs. Like, it was everything that was so toxic that you hear about that modeling agents do. It was like that. I mean, it was just like that. So they showed me some card, like the comp cards of some other girls that one of them literally had the same name as me. And they were like, this Katie is somebody that we think you could look like they really like compared me with other models on their board. And this Katie's working a lot. And I was like, okay, sure. You know, I was not strong and I believed them. And, I thought that they knew what was best for me because I was struggling so much. And I think I just needed, my eating disorder really needed something to latch on to. So long story short, I didn't have my period. I went from kind of bulimia and, purging and binging and purging, from college to, I guess professionally, I needed to take my eating disorder more seriously. I need to take my body more seriously now because I have this financial opportunity. So I started really becoming more anorexic. And I experienced all sorts of eating disorder behaviors and it was really difficult. And then I ended up hitting a wall at some point, just like you. I kind of don't really know what happened, but something happened and I think my body was just kind of like, I'm done. It kind of hit, my engine stopped running. I was just feeling the mental and physical effects were just too much for me to handle. And I really wanted to get my period back. So I ended up buying the book, No Period Now What. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's,
oh yeah. I haven't read it, but I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I was on and off birth control in college. And when I was on and off birth control, that was the only time I ever had a quote period. So I think I had, because of my athleticism growing up, I only had, I think, two like natural periods before I wanted to get on the pill because being an athlete, I had such a low body weight that I got my period really late in my life. So by the time I got my first period, I was like 16 and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to like go on the pill. So, you know, I didn't even give my body a chance to know if I was even able to be regular really. Totally. So anyways, I really wanted to get my period back and have it. So I got that book, No Period Now What, and I started my recovery on my own. Got burnt out from the modeling industry. I was working a lot and making a lot of money, but I don't know. I think my healthy self was like, you got to get over this. You can't. I was all in as far as like getting my period back. I just wanted that so much more than I wanted anything else. And then I started my recovery and the recovery started happening and I realized how amazing it was. So I just kept going and I got my period after about, I think eight or nine months of, you know, really trying to get it back and trying to recover. And then after I got my period back, that's when I was like, I need to start sharing this on social media because my life is really changing a lot. I went to Bali, I got my period back in Bali. It was like a spiritual experience. It was crazy. And wow. In Bali, I told somebody I was with on the trip, I was like, I think I need to share about my journey. I think I need to stop pretending like I'm this perfect model on social media and I have a perfect life. I think I just need to be real with the small number of people. I had like 3,000 followers at the time. I'm like, the small number of people that follow me need to know. It was mostly for other models I had met and my friends. And so I did. I started sharing and after I got my period back, I realized, okay, I don't just need to recover from hypothalamic amenorrhea, which is when you don't have your period, but I also need to recover from my eating disorder. So that's when I really was able to be real with myself and say, okay, I have an eating disorder. This isn't just about getting my period back. This is about recovering from my eating disorder. So I really had to be okay with the fact that I had an eating disorder and then I could start really healing it. And then that's it. I mean, I started my YouTube channel, which was really popular. Like I had a couple like viral videos, which is so weird. I don't really know how that happened.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I'm like, what? But I started my podcast after that. And like I'd say a year after that, because I really wanted to do more like long form content because YouTube was like demonetizing all of my 5-minute videos because they had the word eating disorder in them. So I was like, okay, I hate you, whoa, YouTube. Yeah, I actually don't do YouTube anymore, but it's not the reason why, but I'm just a little bit too busy. So, and then I switched agents. I know I'm kind of like going back and forth. I switched agents and now I'm modeling still, but I'm really on, I would say, the good side of the industry. And I just talk about recovery and all the things that are come along with it. And I'm in school now to become a mind body eating coach. So I'm hoping to slowly exit the industry in 2022. Hopefully I'll be done. because I really enjoyed it, but I feel like there's like a, there's a time where I think we're all people, I don't know, just doesn't serve me anymore. So yeah. I'm not feeling as passionate about it as I was. I mean, it did serve me in a lot of ways, but yeah, that's yeah. it. I think that was a really long answer. Sorry.
No. I mean, that's exactly how mine was on your podcast. I mean, it's hard to really encapsulate your whole journey in such a small amount of time, but thank you so much for sharing. I think that was incredible. And I can relate. I was just taking mental notes as you were talking, because there's so many things that I wanted to touch on. I mean, I guess the first being, I guess we can kind of back up to when, you know, you were still struggling. So as I mentioned, you know, on your podcast, I took this as something where I wasn't good enough. Like I couldn't make myself throw up. So I never actually struggled with bulimia, but I know a lot of my friends, you know, who've come on my podcast and talked about it. But I would like to touch on like the binge eating side mm-hmm. of things, because I feel like, and I would just love your thoughts on this, because I feel like so many, I don't know, just in the recovery space or in, maybe it's just on social media or just the, I don't know, kind of the eating disorder community of people who have struggled with food, I almost feel like anorexia and restriction is subconsciously like very praised, and put, not praised, but like it's more socially acceptable for people to talk about, where mm-hmm. I feel like not a lot of people really talk about if they struggle with binge eating. You know, you feel very shameful when you talk about it. So, I mean, what was your journey like with binge eating? Do you feel that at all with sort of like, there's a lot mm-hmm. of more shame associated with that? Kind of just would love to hear your thoughts on that, 'cause that's something I've always thought about for a while, but haven't really talked to anyone mm-hmm. about.
I love this question. I actually just posted a reel and a TikTok, even though I have like two TikToks, that's all. But I posted a reel and a TikTok about a little bit showing how I actually looked when I was bulimic, because it definitely didn't look like I had an eating disorder. I looked really different. I was very malnourished. But yeah, it's so true. Even now when I talk about my past binge eating and bulimia, I feel just still some shame. So it's like, wow, I'm so open about being anorexic, but even, I don't know, society, I think has really, I think that the diagnosis of anorexia, like having in media, the way anorexia and eating disorders look, it is anorexia. You know, we look at all the media that talks about the dangers of eating disorders, and it's all about the physical body and about the physical hospitalization and going to PHP and all this stuff. And I think that's really like a shame, because a lot of people, like you mentioned on my podcast, like they don't feel like they're sick enough to have an eating disorder, or they would say, oh, I just have disordered eating or whatever. And, you know, I would say it's really important to say that you have an eating disorder. Like if you have it, you have to say it, and you have to kind of own it and be like, this is a part of me that needs to be healed, and I can't like half-ass it, or else I'm just going to continue to be stuck. But yeah, I mean, it was a cycle. Binging is a cycle. And at first I started, you know, ideally I would just restrict. That's ideally what I would do. That's what my eating disorder told me. So I would restrict all day. And then at night my brain would be screaming for food. My body and my mind would need food. I would need it for my soul, for my body, for my mind, for my heart, everything about me would need food. We're all human, so we all need food to survive. Yeah. And my body wanted to survive. So I would cave into the binging. And once you start, if you restrict your food, once you start, you can't really stop, because that's the way that our physiology is. And I think a lot of people who do, that's why I feel like a lot of people, diet culture has made cheat days this thing that's kind of socially acceptable, where you can go all week with just being perfect, and you can have this one cheat day that you can get all this comfort from food and all this pleasure and satisfaction from food in one day, instead of dispersing it throughout your week, which is what the healthy mind wants to do. And when I would binge, I would feel so bad about my body. And I don't know if this is good or bad, but unfortunately, unlike you, I was able to purge. I actually really remember very vividly the first time it happened. I was young and my parents weren't home, and I just did it. I mean, I was able to do it, and it wasn't pretty. I cried. It was a terrible experience, but you know, I felt accomplished, I guess, that I was able to get rid of the thing that I was trying to fix, the binging that I had just did. So yeah. And unfortunately, like I said, there was definitely some deeper feelings that needed to be addressed. I believe that our binge eating and our eating disorders in general, any behavior it is, they're all messengers for us to really access like a part of us that we're neglecting, or a core belief that we need to let go of or change. And binging was a way for me to cover that up and to avoid those feelings and to avoid that pain that I needed to endure. So it just becomes a habit. You know, once something happens one time, it becomes a little bit more normalized. And then it happens again, it becomes a little bit more normalized until it's so normal that you can't imagine not doing it. You know, it's tricky.
Totally.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing. I think so many people can relate. So how did you start to get out of that? Because I know that especially for bulimics, they don't like the purging, but it's almost that feeling, the release is almost just like, okay, like I'm okay. Like, you know, back to square one. And I can see where that feeling would be sort of addicting. So how did you start? Did you work with someone? I know you mentioned you sort of embarked on recovery on your own. Like, what did that look like?
When I first started my bulimia recovery, I said to myself, oh, I just want to be anorexic. So I just don't want to throw up anymore. I don't want to binge and purge. So it was kind of like letting go of that first. And I just shifted it over to anorexia, which wasn't healthy at all. I don't recommend that route. I mean, any eating disorder is worthy of like getting treatment and getting help. So when I started my recovery, I was mostly just like not eating enough food. I wasn't really doing any of the purging behaviors. I mean, I was sometimes, but not as much. But I saw a eating disorder therapist. So she had the Certified Eating Disorder Specialist acronym after her name. I think it's CEDS, CEDS. And she was helpful, and I felt lucky to have her, but I ended up doing YouTube, like I said, and having social media, which honestly really helped me as well. Just having like a sense of community was important for me. And not that you have to be an influencer and develop, you know, have a sense of community. You can find community anywhere. There's a lot of resources for like Need a Website and other groups and stuff that you can join. Some of them are free too, so it's great. But I ended up relapsing, what I would call a relapse. And I think it was about a year or so into my recovery. And I kind of realized in my relapse that I was kind of in what they call quasi-recovery, which is like when you're not really all the way in recovery, you're kind of still doing some eating sort of behaviors, or you're kind of letting your thoughts, you're acting on some of the thoughts that you have. So I put myself into treatment. So I went to eating disorder treatment. I went to outpatient treatment, and it was a very interesting experience. I went 5 days a week, and I was there for 4 hours a day, and I ate either lunch or dinner there. Typically I had dinner there, but I could choose which like sessions I wanted to go to. But I really liked going to the evening ones because there was more people there. Like sometimes it was like only a few people in the lunchtime, and it was, you know, it's more fun when you're like around a lot of people. I say fun. It was not that fun, but it was, yeah. The community was there. And that was a really interesting experience being in treatment, because I tried to like live my normal life where I was working and doing social media and modeling and doing fit modeling, which is a whole other thing. Fit modeling is a whole other thing, but I was doing fit modeling and I was also in treatment, and I really realized that I couldn't do both. I couldn't do both as far as time goes. And I also couldn't do both because I was literally going to castings for my fit jobs and I was getting measured. I don't know if you know what fit modeling is, but
is it just like, you know, yeah, explain it.
It's, a lot of people think it's fitness, but it's not.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
When you go in for clients and you are, fitting clothes for them. So they don't really take pictures of you, but you are like a human mannequin, and you tell them like I'm like, oh, this t-shirt sample, like you need a, the neck feels too small and the underarm isn't shaped right. So you basically fit, they fit clothes on human beings. So that was my, that's my job. I mean, that's where I make most of my money. I have a few clients I work with now. And back then I had a few clients too. And so I was going in and I was like in eating disorder recovery while I was literally a human mannequin. Like it just wasn't, it wasn't working out for me. I wasn't vibing with that. So I had to make the extremely hard decision to take a break from work for, I think it was 12 weeks, which we were talking about this earlier on my, on Take the Cake, but I was definitely like stressed about not being busy. Like I needed to be busy and it was like almost a distraction for me. So the fact that I had to call all three of my agents and humbly say, hey, I'm struggling with my eating disorder. I need to go to treatment. I'll let you know when I'm done. It was like really, really hard, but I did it. And
how did they take that? Like in the industry, like how did they react to that? Was it, cause it wasn't your agency you have now that you said was amazing, right? Like, were they kind
it
of
actually
like,
was.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I feel like I'm going all over the place, but I did end up switching my agents in 2018. And then I think in 2019 is when I went to treatment. So
okay.
I did get new agents and they were all so supportive. I cried my eyes out because I was like nervous and like sending the email, like we need to have a meeting.
Yeah.
And then they were all so sweet and nice and supportive. And they're like, yeah, just let us know when you're ready to come back. Like wish you best of luck. Some of them even checked on me. It was great. And I feel very supported by my agents and I feel really, really lucky to have them. And, it was a good experience going to treatment because I really was able to uncover the emotional side of my eating disorder that I wasn't able to tap into because I was physically recovered, but emotionally I just wasn't unlocking some of those things. So yeah, I recommend anyone who's struggling with an eating disorder, it doesn't matter what kind it is, just getting help in some capacity. Like there are so many resources available that are pretty accessible now with like telehealth and there's groups, there's coaches, there's therapists, there's dietitians, there's doctors, there's free support groups and just finding out, there's finding those communities. There's even great Instagram pages to follow. There's terrible Instagram pages to follow too. So unfollowing some people is really important. And yeah, surrounding yourself with the recovery content that's positive, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I mean, I think it's so powerful and impressive that you took time off from work. I honestly thought you were going to say, I made the hard decision to like stop going to treatment so I can, you know, keep working. Cause that I think would have been the easy thing, right? You're like, well, this is sort of like a pain in my ass. Like I have to go 4 hours a day. Like I can just, I could picture myself being like, screw this, you know?
It was every time I drove there, it was like, are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? And it was so humbling. Like, I'm like not eating dinner with my husband. I'm eating dinner with all these people who have eating disorders. Like I had to take a step back literally every day and be like, I'm just like these people. Like I'm literally just like these people and I need to be here. It was so tricky.
Wow. For people who don't know, cause I mean, and for me too, like I've never done inpatient or outpatient. If you don't mind sharing, like what is the difference for people who don't know? And then also, you know, what did you do during those 4 hours? Did you talk with, you know, counselors? Did they kind of just like force feed you? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah. Okay. So there's, IOP, which is intensive outpatient, and there's PHP, which I think it stands for partial hospitalization. I don't know what the last P stands for. Maybe patient. I don't know. I have no idea. And, then there's residential. So there's three like tiers of treatment. And the eating disorder treatment model is actually kind of flawed. Like if you do the research, there's not like access for a lot of Black people. And it's really unfortunate, like underserved communities, it's very expensive. A lot of times insurance doesn't cover it. So it's not a perfect model. But I mean, look, if you have access to treatment, I would say go if you can. I hope it changes though. Anywho, so I will say this, a lot of eating disorder treatment centers, if you go to them and you say like, I can't afford this or my insurance doesn't cover it, a lot of times they will give you scholarships. I actually was able to get a scholarship because my insurance was sucked. So I wanted to mention that as well. It still was expensive, but I was able to make it work. So yeah, residential is when you go to a facility and you live there. So it's just like 24 hours a day, you live somewhere, because typically those are people who are really, really struggling. Definitely mm-hmm. should have gone to residential a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then PHP is when you're there all day. I think it depends on the treatment center, but I think you eat all your meals there, I'm pretty sure, but you like sleep at home and you like go in at like 8 a.m. and you leave at like 5 p.m. And then mm-hmm. IOP is the one I did, and that's when you go in for, depending on the treatment center, I went for 4 hours, and I started off going 5 days a week, and then as I was getting like closer to being admitted out, I guess, not admitted, what's the word? I don't know. Longer I was there.
Discharge,
that's it, exactly. Yeah, discharge.
The beautiful discharge word.
I know. That's no wonder I couldn't think of that word. Yeah,
like, you're like, discharge. What's
going on? Yeah. So I ended up, the last few weeks I was there, I ended up only going for 3 days a week. So that's how that works. And there was a schedule, like a weekly schedule. So it depended on the day, but you would always do 1 hour. I had a dietitian and a therapist, and I would meet them once a week. So 1 hour of the week I met with my dietitian, and 1 hour of the week I met with my therapist. When I had a dietitian, I had a meal plan, and I would like talk to her about my feelings about the meal plan, things that I was experiencing, and she would change it or leave it the same depending on how I felt and how I was feeling. And then with my therapist, obviously, was talking about more of the emotional stuff. So that was like 2 hours a week. And then the other stuff, we would do different forms of group therapy. Sometimes we'd have like an art therapy session. Sometimes we would watch a movie. Sometimes we would do a yoga class, very easy yoga, but it was like a nice stretch mm-hmm. and relaxing yoga class, which I actually really appreciate that they incorporated there. And we would also do DBT, and we would do more like nutritional lectures. So it was really just dependent on the day and whoever was there. There was a variety of staff there. They all kind of had like their own specialty. So I would go in and it would just be, you know, whatever they would lecture on. Sometimes mm-hmm. it was engaging content that like we would like be, you know, given worksheets and we have to work with them. Sometimes it was like more like a lecture style. So that was what I experienced. I think everyone's experience is different. And then you ate a meal there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. You ate a meal. I think it was 30 minutes of meal time, and you brought your own food to IOP and PHP, where I went. You brought your own food and you had to prepare it in the kitchen with everyone else. And then you have to have a dietitian check you off. Like you would show them your food and then they would look at your meal plan and they'd be like, okay, you're good. And if it wasn't good, if there was something missing, they had like a pantry or a fridge with like extra food that you could, you know, add in your fats or your starches. So you could pick whatever one you wanted. So everyone plated their food and warmed up their food. And then you all had to wait until everyone got to the tables. And then when you were at the tables, you ate together. And there were definitely some people, some days, who didn't eat. And it was really uncomfortable because, you know, everyone's at different stages of their recovery. So you really have to be so strong and eat your own food while the person across from you is clearly not eating and just talking the whole time. And then if you don't eat your food, where I went, you had to drink shakes. So you would just have to drink a shake. I never did that, but that's because I was pretty strong in my recovery. I'm sure if I would have been, you know, back where I really needed to go to treatment, I'm sure I would have had the shakes. So.
Wow. Oh, that's so interesting. I can imagine that there's sort of this weird, was there any like competition in recovery, especially as I assume most of it was a lot of women probably. I mean, I don't know, but like, I can imagine it's tough in a group therapy or a group recovery setting when like you're at a different stage and someone else, like you said, isn't eating and you're just like, was that triggering for you?
It would have been, it was triggering in ways. I think it wasn't triggering enough for me to be like, okay, I'm not going to eat my food this time. But I think I was not a very, my eating disorder made me, not a very kind person. So I think more so I would project on other people. Like I'd look at other people's plates and I'd be like, that person's eating pasta, but that person's eating like chicken and rice. So I feel like I would rather be that person right now. You know what I mean? And it was more of like a me observing other people. So I had to continue to check myself and be like, dude, just focus on your own stuff. Like stop judging other people and be a good person. But yeah, it definitely, the comparison exists, the competition exists, but I did feel supported in treatment by the people I was with. I think you're with these people, and whenever you are vulnerable with a group of people, usually good things end up coming from it. You know, you develop deeper relationships with people, and I felt supported by the people I was with, and I felt like I was genuinely friends with them, and I felt like I wanted them to recover. I really wanted, almost more than I wanted myself to recover, which I'm sure you can understand. I wanted to be there for them. So I was proud of my peers and the people I was with, for sure. And I can relate to the fearing food. I've never had a corporate job, but actually one of my friends has, and she's talked to me about the exact same thing that you're talking about, how she would feel so guilty. She'd go up and get a bag of chips, and then she would get another bag of chips, and she would like secretly eat them or eat them in the bathroom and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I totally understand. I would do the same thing if I was really struggling too.
Eating in secret was a big one for me. Like I remember my biggest fear was like having my boyfriend walk in or someone catching me like as I was eating or binging. And yeah, these are memories too that, you know, I know I mentioned this on your podcast, but it's so wild to think back because that was me, but it feels like a different lifetime ago. And it's like, you know, again, like not to brag, but really to give people listening hope, because it's like with you too, it's like you were going there 5 days a week for 4 hours a day. Like that is an insane amount of time to spend on something. And it just goes to show like, you know, how much work it does take to really heal your relationship with food, but it's obviously so worth it. One question I did have is, what do you wish that people knew about recovery? Like, I feel like on social media, it's starting to get a little bit better where, you know, people are being very vulnerable about it and opening up. But is there anything you wish people knew that, you know, maybe they're either embarking on it or just they're curious and.
I love this. I've never been asked this before. I love that recovery is being kind of like glamorized on social media, but it's still social media. And anytime you are even in recovery, you compare your recovery to other people's, you know, you're just so used to that comparison. So freeing yourself up from comparing yourself to other people is really key. I have two things I want to say. Sorry.
yourself, as many as you want.
Okay, cool. Comparing yourself is so second nature to so many of us, but really it's not wise because everyone's body is so, so, so different. Our recovery is going to depend on our socioeconomic status, how much we ate yesterday, how much we ate last year, how many, you know, if we are on our periods, if we're not, if we're exercising, if we're not, if we have our gut microbiome, our genetics, our environment, our stress levels, our trauma. If you really, like, I can't even think of all the things that affect my body. So comparing myself to other people, it's like, whoa, that's a whole other thing. It's like, I can't even keep up with like what I need sometimes. So I can't compare myself to other people. So try really hard not to compare yourself to other people and really be real with yourself and ask yourself, am I strong enough in my recovery to even be like on social media at all and following even like recovery positive people? Because, you know, I don't know, just being real with yourself and in your recovery and staying strong. And I also just want to say another thing, recovery is so hard and it is extremely challenging and it's a life shift. It's an internal shift that feels like it, for me, it really felt like I didn't know where I was going with this. Like I didn't know what was on the other side. I didn't know who I was going to be. I didn't know if my body was going to look like this, if my body was going to look like this. I had all these questions and I get questions and DMs from people all the time who are like, Did your body keep shifting? Did your recovery stop? Do you still fear food? Like all these questions that are way projected into the future. So being present with the day to day is so key, and making those daily choices that will add up to the big picture, because thinking about your future is going to lead you spiraling. It's just how it goes. So I think being present, and if you make the wrong choice, take it as a gift, take it as a sign, and forgive yourself and move on and know that you can always do it again. And you'll never go back into the black hole. And if you feel like you're in the black hole again, you have enough information to get out of it because you already did it once. So you can definitely do it again. Okay, I think that's all I'm going to say. I think that was like many, many
beautiful things. Beautiful. So good. I would say, I mean, going off of that, what do you think was the best part of recovery? Like, to give people who are either, you know, maybe currently going through it and they're like, oh, this sucks, I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, what would you have to say to them just to like, why was it worth it for all that struggle, I guess?
Oh, that's a hard question, because I have like so many things that I feel like are worth it. Like in general, it's just so good. I am like a different person, 1000%. I can't even put myself back into the mindset. I can't even like remember what it was like. It's so far away from me. And I just perceive life so differently, and I can love other people better. I can love myself better. I can really like live in this world, and it's very fun and enjoyable to actually have like interests outside of eating and have a life outside of, like, it's so fun to go out to eat with your friends, and it's so fun to live like spontaneity and just be free. It's so fun to just live life like that. And also, recovery wisdom is just the coolest thing, and I feel very compelled to people who have recovered from something difficult. It doesn't have to be an eating disorder, it can be anything, because recovery wisdom will take you places that are like amazing. So, yeah.
Those are so good. Just wrapping up. So going back to like the modeling side, you know, I know that you said that you're sort of closing the chapter on that, but just curious how that sort of impacts your, you know, you must be, it's just impressive to me, like you must be so strong mentally, just like kind of working in that industry still. And does that still impact your body image or your mental health on a day-to-day basis, you know, like getting measured and everything?
I'm so strong now, and I feel really confident, but it's interesting because I didn't always feel that way. And if I'm really being honest with myself, the past couple of years of me continuing to do the modeling, I think have slowed me down a little bit, or in general, they did slow my recovery down. But I'm such a go-getter that I'm like, okay, I'm going to fight this. And now that I feel actually so confident and so self-assured, I'm like, okay, I'm going to quit the industry. Like, now that I'm in the place where I'm like, yes, I can do this, like fully 100%, I'm good. My like highest self is like, peace, like we're out of here. Yeah. So it's really interesting that how it's all worked out for me. But that's just honestly me being real. Yeah. You know, I'm just like, I don't really care about this anymore. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works. Yeah. I know. It's like almost when it's like you get to this place that you've wanted to be for so long, and then you're like, wait, I'm kind of over this now. Like, it doesn't have me. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, thank you so much. This was like so enlightening for me, and I know for everyone listening. Where can people find you? Where can they listen to your podcast? Share all of the things.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it. I feel like your audience is awesome. I don't know why. I can just tell. Probably because you're awesome. So it makes sense.
They are awesome. They're awesome. Yeah.
So I'm just at @KateNoel__. Someone has Kate Noel and Kate Noel underscore. So I have 2 underscores. And it's just KateNoel_. And then I have a podcast called Take the Cake with Kate Noel. And I also have an Instagram for my podcast. It's just Take the Cake Pod. And I have a YouTube channel. The videos are pretty archived. I haven't made one since February, but I did just whip out my camera lately, and I've been doing some random clips. So I might upload it in there. That's pretty much it. I can't think of anything else.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, awesome. And I'll link it all below so people can click right to it. Cool. Thank you so much for being here. This was great.
Thank you so much. Oh, it was so fun.